Hello. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 12th of September. First, an apology for the fact that you didn't get your Talking Newspaper last week due to an error with collection by the distributors. And also, in this week's wallet, you'll have received the September magazine recording, which was scheduled to go out last week. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by my husband, Tom Williams, and myself. And your readers today are Richard Martin.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And John Regan.
Hello.
And I'm Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Silver Hill Bid Outcry, 20,000 Soak Up Spirit of the Alsford Show, and the County Says Goodbye to the Lord Lieutenant. So, now, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Richard.
Silver Hill Bid Outcry. Dozens of Winchester shops and businesses have broken ranks to slam the proposed Silver Hill development. The chief executive of the Business Improvement District said it backs controversial plans to transform a quarter of the city. But 42 of its more than 800-strong membership have this week written an open letter to Winchester City Council leader, Councillor Rob Humby, in which they criticise the £150 million project. They say, by drawing the prime pitch away from the High Street, the oldest and one of the most successful in the country, to Silver Hill, the proposal will damage the heart of the city and the vitality of all the existing retail activity in and around the High Street. We know how difficult business can be and the changes and stresses caused by online retailing. We are the people on the ground and we understand what our customers want. It is not the current Silver Hill proposal. Alex Edwards, who has owned boutique Cadogan & Co. in the square for more than 20 years, explained why he has signed the letter. He said, I don't think we have the infrastructure to deal with a lot more shops. Look at the effect of the Christmas market on Winchester. My customers say they have to queue for 2 hours to get into the city. Mr. Edwards said he thought developer Henderson would fill the 27 proposed shops if they offered a reverse premium and effectively paid people to move in. He said, a lot of people might leap at it, but it might drain a lot of life out of the High Street, which would be rather a shame. Paul Moore, whose jewellery business Loot has traded for 33 years, was also worried that the city centre could end up with a surfeit of retail. He said, the Brooks has never been full. It hasn't worked. I think the same will happen to Silver Hill. They're trying to make us like Gunwharf. Winchester is an attractive place to come for an experience, but not necessarily a retail one. Winchester City Council Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who is spearheading the campaign to prevent the development, said, this reflects the depth of feeling and antipathy towards Silver Hill from retailers and businesses on the ground who know what is really going on. Councillor Gottlieb is preparing a High Court legal challenge. The Cabinet heard yesterday that if the case does go to a two-day judicial review, the cost to the council could be £80,000. The City Council argues that Silver Hill is needed to secure the commercial future of the city.
20,000 soak up spirit of the Alsford Show. Whether it was a bun full of pulled pork or a prize-winning goat, this year's Alsford Agricultural Show had something for everyone. And despite the odd light shower here and there, it didn't dampen the spirits of the 20,000 visitors as children climbed up and then abseiled from trees while others enjoyed the impressive dog trick show. Children giggled as beagle puppies licked their painted faces and others gorged on locally produced ice cream. For James Goddard, 7, his first trip to the show proved a memorable one as he tried to catch up with his brother, 9-year-old Owen, as they raced up a giant oak tree. Their mother, Sarah, 43, from Park Road in Bishop's Waltham, said her Upham Primary School boys had a great time. It's the one thing we make a point of coming to every year, she said. We meet up with some friends and make a good day out of it. James was so excited this morning, it was all he would talk about. For Poppy McGlenn, 9, the day was about showing off her favourite goat, Paloma, after she travelled from the Isle of Wight with her grandmother, Linda Redford, 64. Poppy said, "I like showing all the goats and getting the prize money. I like talking to people about it, and I'm going to keep coming back every year." But Paloma wasn't the only animal stopping people in their tracks. Meonside Gangster, a one-year-old beef shorthorn owned by David Bradley Farmer, was crowned champion for his impressive 850-kilogram frame. Rachel Brandt of the Hants and Barks Ferret Club said she was pleased there had been so much interest in their pets, Lucifer and Zaffan, this year. "We come round to raise money for ferret welfare," she said. "We've got our club running costs and we support many different rescue centres around England. We have a lot of different projects on, and most recently we built a medical room for Surrey Ferret Rescue." Issy Rames, 9, from Titchbourne, said she was excited about taking her first show jumping moment with her horse Jack. The Cheriton Primary School pupil said, "It's my first show with him and I love horses. Jack is my favourite. I've been riding him for 2 years and I'd like to teach riding one day." The marquee for the Aylesford and District Horticultural Show saw a record 590 exhibits. Fine fruits and vegetables rub shoulders with the heaviest, longest, or most interestingly shaped specimens, and the jewel-like colours of flowers drew many admirers. The tables hosting the culinary section groaned under the 137 exhibits, which featured 22 carrot cakes, 14 jars of jam, and 10 entries in the men-only class with excellent examples of lemon drizzle cake. And there are 3 photos, very colourful photos, which accompany this article. One is of Alice and Emma Guest from Ropley stroking a Belgian draft pony. There are 2 Spanish-dressed people on a white horse looking very proud, like they're doing something very exciting. And finally, there's David Bradley Farmer with his champion bull, Meonside Gangster, who looks incredibly beefy. It's a very appropriate name.
Now, here's a piece marking a very important moment in local history. And it's headed, "County Says Goodbye to Lord Lieutenants." Hampshire has said goodbye to its long-serving Lord Lieutenant, Dame Mary Fagan. A special reception in Winchester was held to mark her 20 years' service, including a beaten retreat by the band of the Scots Guards. More than 300 people attended the invitation-only event at the Great Hall on Tuesday, from charity representatives and military personnel to the mayors of Southampton, Winchester, Eastleigh, Test Valley, Fareham and Gosport. The band gave an impressive performance in the courtyard, which Dame Mary later described as the best she has ever seen. She also thanked guests for a fantastic evening before making them roar with laughter at her jokes and anecdotes. She said, "Hampshire has a strong volunteering base and I never cease to be amazed at the dedication and commitment shown by the volunteers. I shall certainly miss meeting the people who work so hard to make Hampshire the vibrant and successful county that it is. Working with so many organisations with dedicated staff and volunteers has been a very special experience." Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, said she would be missed far and wide for her personality and ability to connect with people of all ages. He said, "20 years ago you became the very first woman to become the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, and now the question people ask is whether a man could do the job." Hampshire has been a county since the 8th century, and has had a Lord Lieutenant since the 16th century, including many famous people, one of them the Duke of Wellington. And you, Dame Mary, will now take your place on that long list. Mr. Perry presented Dame Mary with a commemorative book, complete with tributes from social dignitaries. Since her appointment in January 1994, Dame Mary has been part of Hampshire's history, including attendances at celebrations to mark the Queen's golden wedding in 1997, the D-Day 50th commemorations in 1994, and the 60th anniversary of the coronation in 2013. As president and patron of 60 organisations, she's attended 15,000 visits to charities, businesses, schools, voluntary organisations, universities, colleges and the armed forces, and has been responsible for 800 royal visits. And now Vice Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson will take over. And that piece is accompanied by two photographs. First of all, a rather splendid picture of the Scots Guards beating the retreat for Dame Mary, and then an inset photograph of Dame Mary herself, looking rather elegant and probably a little bit nostalgic.
Here are the death notices. Bartlett, Patricia Bartlett, landlady of the Flower Pots Inn, Cheriton, aged 95. Beach, Jocelyn Beach, in Abingdon, aged 94. Beecham, Carol Beecham, after a long battle, bravely born, aged 63. Brown, Doreen Brown, at Berwick Court Nursing Home, aged 99. Another Brown, Ronald Brown, for 25 years church warden at St Mary's Twyford and in retirement chairman of Winchester Housing Trust, died peacefully at home, aged 82. Harriet, Agnes Harriet, at Abbots Barton Nursing Home, aged 88. And she was a particularly hard worker for the Winchester Talking News at one time. I have been asked to remind you, tell you. Anyway. Ingram, Harold Ingram, ex-superintendent Hampshire Police, now at peace following a long illness. Payne, Barbara Payne, former landlady of the Cricketers Easton and the King Charles Kingsworthy, peacefully in hospital, aged 86. Quartley, Sheila Quartley, at home. Rocky, Rachel Rocky, suddenly, aged 34. Timms, Basil Anthony Timms, aged 96. And finally, Witcher, Leslie Thomas Witcher, aged 76. And now, Maria, would you please read Christian Comment?
Christian Comment this week is written by Mary Gray. After the referendum, healing the wounds of history. I'm standing on Twizel Bridge in Northumberland, where in 1513, English soldiers were marching rapidly to Flodden Field near the village of Brankston, where they engaged with the Scottish troops. This was the bloodiest battle recorded between England and Scotland, resulting in slaughter on both sides and the death of the Scottish king, James IV. It followed on the heels of hundreds of years of border raids and more serious battles recorded in ballad and folklore. But Flodden was far from the end. After it would come the Jacobite rebellions and the famous defeat of Bonnie Prince Charlie at Culloden Moor in 1745. Yet the chosen site for a peace and reconciliation centre lies in the village of Crookham, in its United Reformed Church, just next to the site of the Flodden Field battle. In this church, an exhibition tells the story of Flodden, chronicling dramatically the troubled relations between England and Scotland, before and after. Outside there is a beautiful peace garden where visitors are invited to stay and reflect on the tragedy inflicted by conflict here and elsewhere. I found it sobering to be reminded of this blood-stained history now, when Scotland is on the brink of deciding whether to stay with England or become independent. Serious arguments are being heatedly exchanged for and against the case on each side of the border. But for Christians, the arguments are framed differently. From the earliest scriptural witness, St. Paul, the message is clear. In Christ, there is no East and West, neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, slave nor free, Galatians 3:19. Borders are artificial, and the gospel command to love God and neighbour transcends political divisions. Sadly, the process of this decision has already caused rifts between communities on both sides. Old memories of ancient feuds have been rekindled. There is a challenge for all Christian churches to engage in a healing process, whatever the outcome of the referendum. Christianity itself has not had an easy journey towards unity in Scotland, itself with many divisions since the Reformation. Yet communities like that on the island of Iona stand as beacons of hope. Iona's hospitality towards Christians of all denominations and its traditions of healing invite churches on both sides of the border to respond to the new situation to be faced. Re-entering the Peace Garden near the site of Flodden Field, my hope and prayer was that never again would England and Scotland revisit the enmity and injustices of the past, and that Christians on both sides of what is at present the border will be able to play their part in redeeming the wounds of history.
We come to the letters to the editor, and would you like to start with the first letter, please, John?
Yes, this is an appeal for help from a student at the University of Southampton whose name is Michelle Holmes. And it's headed, Survey of Breast Cancer Treatment. Sir, have any of your readers completed treatment for breast cancer in the last 5 years? Have they ever used the internet to look up complementary and alternative medicine treatment? The University of Southampton, as part of a student project, is conducting a study to explore the use of the internet to find information about complementary and alternative medicine amongst people living beyond breast cancer. If any readers have finished treatment for breast cancer in the last 5 years, with a minimum of 6 months since their last active cancer treatment, that's to say chemotherapy, radiotherapy or surgery, and are an internet user and would be interested in contributing to our research, we'd like to hear from them. We would like to interview people about how they use the internet to find out information about complementary and alternative medicine. They do not have to have ever used complementary and alternative medicine. The interviews will take approximately 1 hour and can be conducted over the telephone. Any inputs will help the university to identify and develop the appropriate resources to support people living beyond breast cancer, to help them to make informed decisions about complementary and alternative medicine. For more information or to assist in our study, email Michelle Holmes at mmh1e13@soton, that's S-O-T-O-N, .ac.uk, with a name, address and preferred contact details, and we'll get in contact either through email or over the telephone. And you can also contact Michelle Holmes at the Faculty of Health Science, University of Southampton.
Michael Coker-Davis urges people to get out on the streets with your placards. Sir, with reference to Mr. Howland's and Mrs. Webb's recent letters about Silver Hill, I feel some clarification is required. Please do not misunderstand the difference between the requirements of local residents, visitors to the city, or the stability and historic integrity of the structure of Winchester with the self-interest of those who, unfortunately, for the moment at least, hold control of Winchester City Council. I have read endless well-structured letters to this paper, ranging on issues from licensing, takeaway restaurants, nightclubs, River Park, and of course, the granddaddy of them all, the Silver Hill development. All to no effect. Huge numbers of local residents have attended council meetings where, in the main, eloquent and well-thought-out arguments have been proffered. They have been met with indifference, arrogance and a total disregard for any view held by anyone other than the council or city developers. So, please, Mr. Howlands, Mrs. Webb, save your arguments. Instead, find the courage to rise up and demonstrate. Get your placards out. Get your neighbours out. See Steve Brine, your MP, and demand he challenges the council. The only way to beat this council is to demand a vote of no confidence. Can you imagine the effect of 500 or 600 of Winchester's reasoned and sensible people on the news blocking the roads of Winchester? Make government sit up. Then and only then will you get change. Michael Kirker Davis, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
This letter by Stephen Cross suggests give them the freedom of the city. Sir, recently I had the pleasure of not only viewing the exterior, but the interior of the Black Hole, an excellent addition to the architectural heritage of the city, but also a triumph for a local entrepreneur. David Nicholson, the landlord of the Black Boy, has yet again put his commercial neck on the line, providing an excellent venue to attract visitors and smartened up a dull corner for all to enjoy. He employed the architect Hugh Thomas, who also has done so much to bring the city into the 21st century without compromising its history. Investors in the life of the city should be recognised. If I knew how to start an online petition to give these two men the freedom of the city, I would do so. Perhaps this letter will inspire someone to do so. Stephen Cross, Main Road, Itchin Abbas. This letter also has a photograph of David Nicholson pictured prior to the opening of the Black Bottle Wine Bar in Bridge Street, standing outside.
And here's another request for assistance. Mm-hmm. It's from Richard Houghton, who lives in Preston in Lancashire, and it's entitled Your Memories of Stone's Lido Gig. Sir, it's now 50 years since the Rolling Stones played the Winchester Lido as part of their rise to become perhaps Britain's most well-known group after the Beatles, and certainly its most long-lasting. I'm compiling a people's history of the Stones, and if any of your readers were at the show back in 1963 and would like to share their memories, who they went with, what they remember of the gig, whether they enjoyed it, I'd love to hear from them. And I can be contacted via email, it's one of those email addresses again, Richard M. Houghton, Richard spelled in the normal way, M-H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N, all one word, @gmail.com, or by letter to the address below. And Richard lives at 32 Manor Avenue, Preston, in Lancashire, PR28DN.
And another familiar theme here, wake-up call for station approach. So, what price democracy? The Silver Hill project has moved to its inevitable conclusion and the station area development is slipping neatly into place in its wake. The council appear intent on getting their proposals for this latter development through, both quickly and without adequate consultation. What are the proposed amendments to the Tipples plan for station approach not being made public and posted on the website? Perhaps they could include 7-storey offices on the corner of Worthy Lane and Andover Road, within 30 yards of the Flint Cottages of Hyde Close. Dracula, the hero of Bram Stoker's novel, found refuge in Carfax Abbey, and we have a far more sinister beast taking refuge in the cellars of our own Carfax. Wake up, citizens of Winchester, before it's too late and the monster devours us all. And that's from Bill Hode, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Mm-hmm. Signs should say, biker think. Sir, I have had enough of the road signs that have sprung up all over the place telling the car driver to think bike, think biker. Every time I see one of these signs, my blood boils. My personal view is, it's the biker who needs to start thinking. I regularly travel on the A272 and I've lost count of the number of utterly insane motorbike riders I've seen, overtaking on blind bends, on the wrong side of the road, sitting on the bumper of cars so we can't see them, and then the council has the cheek to tell the car driver to look out for the bikers. The signs are wrong. They should read, Biker think, and stop putting car drivers' lives at risk. Joe Keel, Millside, Corhampton.
Ah,
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Emailing news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, last time I presented the news, the historical bits had disappeared. Then they came back. Now they're headed from the files. I don't think they were that before. So, here are the items from the files this week.
Let's begin 200 years ago in 1814, August the 8th. His Majesty's ship Castilian arrived at Cork on Monday with the remaining part of the crew of His Majesty's sloop Avon, which had been sunk by the Wasp, an American sloop of war, off the southwest coast of Ireland after a desperate action in which, it's reported, the Avon had 33 men killed. Before the Castilian had time to remove the crew, the Wasp was out of sight owing to night closing in. It was strongly reported in the city this morning that an action has been fought upon the lakes between our flotilla and the Americans, in which we were completely successful. And then a little bit later, September the 9th, 1814, London. The Paris papers, as the term for opening the Congress approaches, abound with fabricated information of discontent brooding in Germany and Italy. The conductors carry their impudence farther and represent the countries which during the War of the Revolution were incorporated with France as dissatisfied in the extreme since their separation. They even have the effrontery to present a contrast between the treatment the inhabitants receive at present and what they endured as subjects of France.
And from 100 years ago, 1914 of course, headed well-known gents to speak at a Peel. The offer made by a number of well-known Winchester gentlemen to attend meetings in the surrounding villages and speak in support of Earl Kitchener's appeal for men has borne good fruit, and with the cooperation of leading local residents, a number of meetings have been arranged. Hampshire has come out splendidly in the crisis, and its villages are depleted of young men who've gone to join the colours without waiting for any special urging to do so. And the second item reads, Winchester and the War. There's been the same scene at the depots in Winchester this week, recruits passing through literally in their thousands. In the earlier part of the week, men were billeted at the Guildhall and the Corn Exchange, but the large drafts sent away have relieved the pressure on the barracks the last couple of days. We gave some prominence last week to the establishment of a marquee on Station Hill for the use of recruits arriving in the city by rail. Since the recruiting began, men have been coming into the city by the hundred every day, and the marquee in question was opened not a day too soon.
And 50 years ago, September the 12th, 1964, line closed after nearly 100 years. The Romsey-Andover railway line felt the edge of Dr. Beeching's axe on Sunday evening, for with the departure of the 8:45pm train from Romsey Station, the line closed, and with it went nearly 100 years of service to the communities in the Test Valley. Just 6 short months less than 100 years ago, the line was laid. And in its heyday, it carried tens of thousands of passengers and hundreds of tons of freight. Then the motor car was only a figment in the imagination of men with vision. Now it is a reality that has to be faced.
And now we come to September 1989, 25 years ago. Winchester Animal Concern, the WAC, a new animal rights group, will be asking shoppers to throw away all their L'Oreal cosmetics and toiletries. It's part of an international day of action against L'Oreal, the world's largest cosmetics company, which still tests beauty products on animals. Shoppers will be invited to dispose of their L'Oreal purchases in a cruelty bin, outside Boots, in Winchester High Street. And a slightly more positive piece here. At the wash-up meeting for the Curdridge show, held at the Reading Room on Friday last, Treasurer Brian James announced that this year's gross takings amounted to £8,204 and a net profit of £5,207. He said several factors combined to make it a resounding success, with the marvellous weather, an increase in the ticket price, and the generosity of Mr. Howard Piper, a resident of Curdridge and owner of several home and leisure centres, who not only sponsored the ring events but also loaned equipment.
And now we have a Chronicle comment, followed by First Person. It's Richard.
And editorial comment this week is headed, An Unwelcome Letter from Firms. Civic chiefs in Winchester will not welcome the letter from dozens of locally owned businesses attacking the Silver Hill development. As reported on page one, more than 40 have written this week to Council Leader Rob Humby, disagreeing with the stance taken by the Business Improvement District in supporting the scheme. They call for a rethink of the project for shops, flats and parking. The letter increases the pressure on the council as it starts to formally consider the revised plans. An issue here is a vision for the future of Winchester. The signatories are largely independent businessmen and women who personally stand or fall by the success of the city centre. They are understandably concerned about how Silver Hill will affect them. The City Council argues that it is too pessimistic and that Silver Hill will help re-energise the city and avoid the risk of stagnation. On balance, the Chronicle agrees. The Chronicle also joins in the widespread thanks and praise for the retirement of Lord Lieutenant Dame Mary Fagan, who stands down after 20 years. Her role has been and will remain a vital one in the social cohesion of Hampshire.
The first person contributor this week is George Hayter, who offers a very thoughtful piece headed The Thousands of Bombs That Fell on Our Neighbours. Staying small was the best thing that happened to Winchester. Just look what happened to our nearest neighbour, Southampton. That did get big, and it was flattened by the Luftwaffe in the Second World War. Juicy targets like the docks and the Spitfire factory inspired the German Air Force to raid the city 57 times between June 1940 and the end of 1944, and frightened citizens had their nerves made raw by 1,000 false alarms. Records kept by the city's ARP, the Air Raid Precautions Service, convey the scale of the havoc. 3,589 buildings destroyed by over 2,000 high explosive bombs and 30,000 incendiary bombs. Swathes of the city centre were literally ruined. Winchester too was hit by German bombs, but on a scale that was tiny by comparison. Today, Winchester, with its cathedral and its medieval hall, tends to think of Southampton with its brass shopping centre and its 1960s tower blocks as an inferior neighbour. But we should remember that if it wasn't for the war, the relationship might almost be the other way around. Before it was blasted and largely burned to the ground, Southampton was a city with historic and architectural treasures that were at least the equal of Winchester's. Yes, Winchester was the capital of emerging England. William the Conqueror had himself crowned in the cathedral, and a later king had a huge palace nearby. But outward-looking Southampton is the port which has always linked England with France and beyond, bringing wealth and ideas. For centuries it was the centre of the national economy, trading English wool for international luxuries. It was from Southampton's West Quay that Henry V set out for Agincourt, and it was the Hamp in powerhouse Southampton that gave our county its name. Before the Luftwaffe came, Southampton had, within its medieval walls, streets of picturesque timber houses, and from the time when the city was a spa and the home of Jane Austen, it boasted elegant Georgian terraces, and it nearly all went up in smoke in the war. Although there were 57 air raids, the destruction of Southampton's historic core largely took place in just two of them. A plaque alongside the bar gate informs all who read the dramatic inscription that those tumultuous couple of nights of air raids took place on November the 30th and December the 1st, 1940. Statistics in the nearby Central Library state that in those consecutive terrifying nights, 800 explosive bombs and 9,000 incendiaries fell. Almost a third of everything dropped on Southampton throughout the war. One local historian tells me that if the two-night blitz had not happened, the beauty and charm of Southampton today would make it as big a tourist attraction as York. The war is all the more reason for us to enjoy what's left of old Southampton, so explore its ancient city walls and savour its heroic surviving medieval buildings.
And Belgarum has four short pieces to say this week, the alternative look at the news. The first one is, the Close provides much-needed parking for volunteers. Just as the City Council closes the last free parking area in Winchester at the Garnier Road car park, the cathedral seems to be filling the void. The Close used to be free of parking, but the gravel drive behind the square has become a parking area. Initially, the area was for staff, but whilst the Education Centre has been revamped, volunteers have been allowed to park there too. A cathedral spokesman explained, "We do from time to time need to make temporary use of additional parking spaces so that volunteers and staff can park when on duty, for instance during the Christmas market. However, on this occasion it's related to the significant construction works which are taking place in the inner close on the new learning centre. I think that's really only of interest to any volunteers." Anyway, Richard, what have you got?
I've got a piece called Rough Sight Becomes 2020 Vision, and there are two photographs which accompany it, and one of which there's a roughly drawn 20 in a circle, done clearly by hand, and in the other photograph, a more professionally, properly marked street with a 20 with a big circle around it. So, the photo was one of the markers sprayed onto Winchester Roads in preparation for the new 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in the city centre. Chronicle reader Ray Whitfield of Pluto Road, Eastleigh, sent in the photo commenting that it looked rather minimalist and prompting Belgarum to wonder if cost-cutting in the highways department had reached a new extreme. But no. A few days later, the official paintwork was completed, making it quite clear how slowly motorists are expected to go.
Winifred was a true inspiration. It is not very often that an inspiration for one of the greatest poets of the past 100 years passes away in Winchester. Winifred Dawson, who has died aged 85, knew Philip Larkin and is said to have inspired several of his 1950s poems. Some 26 letters from Larkin to her are included in the selected letters of Philip Larkin. She met him when both worked in the library of Queen's University in Belfast. Mrs. Dawson later moved to Winchester to work as the librarian at St. Swithin's School. Earlier this year, her biography of Amy Audrey Locke was published. A tribute in The Guardian by friend Anne Thwaite said, "She had a wonderful gift for living life to the full and for friendship." Her funeral was held at St. Matthew's Church in Otterbourne.
And here, Belgarum offers us a cheerful little piece headed, "Police NATO Guards Give Thanks." Hampshire police have gained many admirers in South Wales following their stint guarding world leaders at the recent NATO summit. The officers left a note thanking residents of Newport for their hospitality during the recent huge security operation. The note said, "Thank you to all the residents for your kindness, giving us freshly baked cakes, sausage rolls, cans of drinks, sweets and cups of tea, all greatly appreciated. We will not miss standing on the roundabout for 12 hours at a time, but we will miss the people within the community who showed such friendship and kindness during our stay."
Here we come to a few events that are on in the next few weeks. What's on? On Saturday the 20th of September, there's not one, but two Michaelmas fairs. You can go to St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., where there will be stalls, a barbecue and games, and entry is free, I think. Or make your way to St Cross Hospital from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. where there will be a falcon display, Knights Hospitallers of Warwickshire, and craft stalls. And entry will cost £3, with under 12s free. That's Saturday the 20th of September. A singing for well-being choir is starting at the United Church Hall, Drury Street, every Monday from 11 till 12:30 and 1:30 to 3. This is for the over 60s, especially those with memory or other long-term health issues. It's being run by Winchester Live at Home Scheme, and more details are available by telephoning 01962 890995. That's 01962 890995. On Wednesday the 24th of September, at Abbey House, the Broadway, Winchester, Claire Dixon, a city guide, will give a talk entitled High and Low Winchester Characters, in aid of the Mayor of Winchester's charities. Entry costs £8, including coffee, and can be paid on the door, but do check for vacancies. I think that means to ring to reserve a place, and the telephone number to ring is 01962 852 709. That's 01962 852 709. The Winchester Art Club is staging its annual exhibition at the Discovery Centre from today until Sunday, October the 5th. And for theatre, the play Private Lives by Noel Coward is on at the Plaza Theatre Romsey from the 16th to the 20th of September. That's next week. And for tickets, ring 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. Lighting Up Time ends today, the 12th of September, at 6:35 a.m. and begins again at 7:27 p.m. On Wednesday, the 17th of September, it ends at 6:43 a.m. and begins again at 7:45 p.m. The nights are drawing in. And next to the times for sunrise and sunset, there's a last week's weather at the Environment Agency's climate station at Otterbourne. And I was interested to see that there was not a drop of rain all week. And it looks as if it's going on that way, doesn't it? If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with other items of general news. So we'll go over to Michael, please, for the first one.
Right, well, a rather serious item here, headed Warning Over Savings Scam. Pensioners urged to be vigilant. Pensioners across Hampshire are being urged to be vigilant and not fall foul of bogus police officers conning unsuspecting people out of their savings. The warning comes as a 70-year-old became the latest elderly victim of a phone scam sweeping the nation, which has left scores of people tricked into handing over their life savings. Officers in Hampshire are working with Action Fraud to track down the scammers who are leaving pensioners penniless across the UK. People are being warned not to hand over any cash or bank details to anyone without making thorough checks first. This latest spate of incidents in the Romsey area comes just 5 months after pensioners were targeted by the conmen claiming to be from Hammersmith Police. As previously reported, a 90-year-old woman was one of many vulnerable residents persuaded to hand over large amounts of money by the fake police phone scam, which claims they are officers investigating a financial offence. officers in Eastleigh had at least six victims who'd all been tricked by the same con, three of which lost several thousand pounds. The latest fraud is being linked to those in Eastleigh back in March, but the scam once again using taxis as a means to deliver the cash to London. The 70-year-old from West Willow withdrew the £10,000 from his bank account and gave it to a taxi driver in a sealed brown envelope to be delivered to an address in the capital. The taxi driver delivered the money, as it was not unusual for him to deliver packages for customers. Others who've lost money to the same scam in recent weeks include an 81-year-old man in Willow, an 85-year-old in Bridgefield, an 87-year-old in Ampfield, and an 88-year-old in Sherfield English. Inspector Jackie Wilson from Hampshire Police said, "We're investigating a series of frauds concentrated on elderly and vulnerable residents. The perpetrators are cold calling and purporting to be police officers investigating a financial offence involving the victim's accounts. Residents are reminded never to hand over money to someone at the door, to be sent off elsewhere, and always note the identification of anyone coming to the door claiming to be a police officer. Police are urging anyone with information about the incidents to contact Inspector Jackie Wilson or Sergeant Alison West on 101.
This very sad article by Ali Kefford is titled "Medics May Have Missed Neck Break." Emergency staff at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital probably missed the fact that a retired gardener had broken his neck, an inquest heard. Coroner Graham Short said that when Eric Longman tripped on the pavement on April the 20th last year, on the balance of probability, this caused a fracture. The court heard how the 86-year-old was taken to the county hospital by ambulance, then lay on a trolley in a corridor for about 45 minutes waiting for a bed. Neighbour and former nurse Nicola Lansdowne, who accompanied Mr. Longman to hospital, said, "He started to complain of a headache. He was putting a hand up to his head because the blood was still trickling down his face into his eye. I didn't leave his side. We saw a doctor a good deal later. There were very few staff." Mrs. Lansdowne described the consultant, Dr. Louisa Chan's examination as brief. Dr. Chan told the court how she diagnosed that Mr. Longman had suffered a minor head injury, which is why she didn't order either an X-ray or a CT scan. She said she closely felt the top of his spine and asked him to move his head and limbs in different directions to repeatedly test for any neck injuries, all of which he told her he could do without feeling any pain. "He was fine. The clinical examination of his neck was completely normal," she said. "Even if we had X-rayed him, if he had a hairline fracture, we may not have seen it. I prescribed him some codeine, but he didn't receive it. Mr. Longman spent the next month not leaving his home in Hursley Road, Chandler's Ford, except for two GP visits to complain of persistent headaches, for which he took paracetamol. Neither of these doctors concluded that he had a broken neck." Mrs. Lansdowne said her neighbour's condition deteriorated and he stopped changing his clothes. "When I took him meals, he was starting not to be able to hold the plate straight. He didn't have the strength in his limbs." On May the 28th, her 11-year-old daughter Melissa found Mr. Longman slumped in their drive. "He was a heap of clothes. I thought he was dead. He was so cold," she said. "He had crawled along the drive and just laid there in the rain." After an ambulance returned Mr. Longman to hospital, A&E consultant Dr. J.D. Chitness discovered that his neck was broken just below the base of the skull and had shunted apart by nearly a centimetre so that it was pressing onto his spinal cord. A team of spinal experts concluded that the fracture had possibly happened sometime previously, that surgery was too dangerous, and Mr. Longman was too old and frail to endure traction for a break which probably wouldn't heal itself. Mr. Longman, who was head gardener at Southampton University for 30 years, was described as very calm when told there was nothing that could be done to treat him and he could die within hours or days. In the end, he survived for 7 weeks in hospital before contracting a terminal bout of pneumonia. recording a narrative verdict that nothing could have been done to save his life once the break had been discovered. Coroner Graham Short said, "Given the evidence, I cannot be sure that the fall on April the 20th caused the fracture of his vertebrae. Although, having said that, I believe it's quite possible that it was the cause of the fracture. I have heard no evidence of any other incident or fall which might have explained the fracture to this vertebrae." After the inquest, Mr. Longman's sister, Gladys White, 83, said her brother lived for his gardening and also loved attending steam rallies. She said, "He lived a lonely life, but was very kind. His nurse at the hospital told him he was the only patient who thanked her for what she had done."
Yes, a slightly more upbeat story now. It's headed, "TV Sarah leads the way in walk to save children." Alsford television star Sarah Parrish has told of her pride for her daughter as the charity set up in her memory held its first fundraiser. Sarah and her husband Jim Murray were at the heart of a fundraising 5 kilometre walk around Southampton Common on Sunday in aid of their charity, the Murray Parish Trust. It raises funds towards Southampton General Hospital's new Paediatric Intensive Care Unit, the PICU. Sarah said every pound raised will remind her of daughter Ella Jane, who died at only 8 months old. She told how the funds raised would help other sick children, but was also a way to keep her daughter's memory alive. The couple have been supporting the hospital since losing first child Ella Jane to congenital heart disease 6 years ago, the Murray Parish Trust launched at the beginning of this year. Sarah said they wanted to create something in memory of their daughter, and they had. She said, "When you get a traumatic time like that, to get something positive out of it is a way to get through it. We lost her, but hopefully she's going to save hundreds and hundreds of lives. I'm very proud of her today." The event, which the couple are hoping to stage every year, attracted around 250 people and is thought to have raised £5,000. Prizes for those who raised the most money included a signed Saints football and a tour of the set of television series Atlantis with Sarah, who stars in the BBC drama, and the chance to be an extra. Many from the couple's local community took part, but there were also families who were themselves touched by the work of the children's ward. The Murray Parish Trust aims to raise £1 million in the next 3 years for the new unit, which is set to open in 2020.
I'm afraid I have a very sad piece here. Man 86 shot himself, inquest hears. The former director of local agricultural business Scats died after shooting himself in the head with a shotgun, an inquest heard. Mark Walford, 86, was found in his garden at Down Farm Lane in Headbourne Worthy by his carer, Leslie Webber. Miss Webber said it was clear he'd taken his own life when she found him on May the 15th, 10 days after he'd undergone knee surgery. DC Craig Ferguson of Basingstoke CID said he arrived with the armed response unit at around 5:50 p.m. He said there were no signs of foul play and described it as a very tragic incident. There was no note left about his person or throughout the entirety of the house. South Central Hampshire Coroner Graham Short said, "I'm satisfied that this was self-inflicted, and I'm sure he intended to kill himself, given the way in which he died." Recording a verdict of suicide, Mr. Short added Mr. Walford was clearly in a state to make a rational decision. "I hear there was no note or other explanation as to why he may have chosen this action," he said. "He knew his own mind."
And on a lighter note, engine causes mayhem with a smile. A broken-down lorry carrying a historic steam engine brought traffic chaos to Alsford. The low loader was carrying a 100-ton engine from the Watercress line on loan to a railway at Nene Valley near Peterborough last week. It edged out of Alsford Station and down Station Road before turning into West Street, where it stalled and blocked much of the main thoroughfare. A spokesman for the railway said, "The low loader has broken down. Hopefully it will be fixed sooner rather than later." The breakdown caused localised traffic chaos with long queues in both directions. Charter's estate agents on West Street had the surreal sight of the engine stuck outside its doors for much of the day. It got moving again at about 3:20 p.m. Tim Griffin, spokesman for Charter's, said, "It has caused mayhem, but mayhem with a smile. If it had been a lorry, people would have complained. We had a laugh. We joked that the new company car had arrived." Another engine, dating to 1928, was taken by road to a steam railway in Swanage on Monday without mishap. And there are two pictures accompanying this article. One, the broken down lorry with the train, very beautiful looking train. And another of the train that was successfully sent to Swanage.
And now for something controversial. Headline, City's 20-mile-an-hour limit comes into force.
Oh, yeah.
The new 20-mile-an-hour speed limit has come into force in Winchester city centre. The new 20-mile-an-hour zone roughly follows the old Roman walls around the city centre and reaches parts of Hyde. Reducing the limit from 30 miles an hour, one of the city's biggest traffic decisions in years, is designed to reduce carbon emissions and to encourage more people to walk or cycle to work. Roundel road markings are now in place on the roads and signs are due to be completed this month. County Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "The limit has very widespread support from police, Winchester City Council, local city councillors and the public." He said, "What we're not trying to do is catch motorists out with the speed limits. It's about trying to change the way Winchester City Centre feels to people." He continues, "The scheme will be finished by the end of September, but there aren't any speed guns on the road yet." Mm-hmm. Plans to impose the limit were confirmed by city councillors in April. At the meeting, opponents of the scheme raised concerns that 20-mile-an-hour limits elsewhere had not reduced speeding. Peter Grant, chairman of the St Swithin Street and Simmons Street Residents Association, said, "We've already had experience of the 20-mile-an-hour limits. It was introduced in 2012 and it had a shocking increase in speeding of 5 times. That's such an incredible increase that we have to stop and take recognition of it. Unless this is enforced properly, frankly, you're all wasting your money. Maybe it will make you feel better, but there's no evidence it will help," he concluded. Speed limits have already been introduced in Stanmore, Winall and Highcliffe after successful pilot schemes. Winchester Council is executing the plans on behalf of the County Council, who've discussed the new limit for over a decade. Portsmouth, in fact, became the first city in the UK to introduce the 20-mile-an-hour limit way back in 2006.
Police called over noise at MP's private party. Neighbours complain of a loud music until early hours. Police were called to the house of a Hampshire MP after a private party at his Alsford home raged into the early hours. Neighbours said Lowe's music boomed until 2:30 a.m. as George Hollingbury, key aide to Home Secretary Theresa May, hosted a joint birthday party for himself, his wife Jeanette and his 21-year-old daughter. He invited a live band, DJs and several hundred guests to the large grounds of his country house at Abbotstone Road on Saturday. One neighbour, who asked not to be named, said it was totally horrendous. It didn't matter whether we had double glazing, earplugs, whether we dragged a mattress to the other side of the house, played a radio softly playing classical music to drown it out. We could not get to sleep until about 2:30. It's not music, then. It's an oral assault. It was invasion of your privacy and invasion of your own mental space. Julie Hindmarch of the Soak said, "There was very loud noise, very, very late. It was quite extraordinary. I eventually got to sleep at around 1 a.m. He's been campaigning himself recently about noise levels on the roads. It's at odds with his public commitment to being a good neighbour and keeping noise levels down." Bill Wichard of Alsford Recreation Centre said, "We could see all the shenanigans. It was very loud. I had a customer who said they could hear it in Ropley." But some neighbours said that The noise didn't bother them. Emily Girani of Mill Hill said, "Well, it was a bit loud. I don't know what the fuss was about, really. I think some people haven't got enough to do." The MP for Meon Valley, Private Parliamentary Secretary Miss May, has previously spoken out over noise pollution. In an article for Parish Magazines in April, he said that noise from large groups of bikers on county roads was a real problem, particularly at weekends and on summer evenings, when the noise can be continuous for residents. In a statement, Mr. Hollingbury said he was very sorry for the disruption. "I truly understand it was clearly unpleasant for some of our neighbours, and I very much hope they'll accept my sincere apologies." Mr. Hollingbury told the Chronicle that the party was for friends and family, and that the Prime Minister, David Cameron, and Miss May did not attend.
Student sent home over extreme hairstyle. A potential A-grade Winchester girl is at loggerheads with her school over her dyed blonde fringe. Linda Newbury was asked to leave Henry Beaufort on her first day back because teachers said it breached rules. Lydia, 14, just starting the penultimate year 10, had dyed her usually brown fringe blonde over the holidays, and when she returned last Thursday, was told it did not meet school policy. She says she was told she either faced a day of isolation or could go home. "I didn't think my hair would be a problem," she said. "The school policy says you cannot have extreme hairstyles. It really put a negative spin on my first day back. I just wanted to get on and start my GCSEs, and I don't want to miss any work. I should have the freedom to express myself." Her mother, Ruth Newbury, works as a carer and was unable to pick her up, but said she didn't want her daughter to spend the day in isolation. She said that after the initial conversations with the school, she heard nothing more, only to find Lydia had been told to leave school, despite not having enough bus money to get home. "She called me from Waterstones in Winchester," she said. "She was there because she was cold and crying. She was very upset. I am most upset about how this has been handled. What has it got to do with their learning? All this has done is had a negative effect on her learning. She is somebody that wants to work and has been predicted A's for all her grades. It's not like she is a troublesome student. I don't regard her hair as extreme. Your hair isn't like a uniform. You can take a uniform off, but your hair is something that stays with you for 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Lydia was given until Monday to change the style and used a brown spray to cover the colour on Friday and Monday. On Tuesday, her hair was unsprayed and she was put into isolation for the day. In a statement on Tuesday, Sue Hurl, head teacher, said, "We have been delighted by the excellent start that the vast majority of our students have made to the school year and the importance they have placed on their appearance. I can understand the parents' concern about her daughter's education, but I would like to make it clear that this pupil has not been excluded from school. Each year we remind parents and pupils about this school's uniform policy through the student handbook and in our communication to parents. This policy includes guidance on acceptable hairstyles, and in accordance with the policy, two-tone coloured hair is not permitted. I do acknowledge that pupils will want to express their individuality, but I have to balance that with maintaining discipline in the school and being fair to all pupils. The school has spoken to both Lydia and Mrs. Newbury about this matter, and we are meeting with Mrs. Newbury this week when we hope to reach a mutually agreeable resolution." And there is a photo of Lydia Newbury with her mum sitting on a sofa at home and sporting her blonde fringe.
Now, here's a very dramatic piece, as you can tell from the headline. Insect attack like a horror movie. A mother and daughter who were attacked by insects in Winchester have called on wildlife authorities to warn the public about the flying threats. Jane Dunn and Heather Gardiner were ridden with bites up to 3 inches wide in two separate incidents, but conservationists said the risk of bites was part of nature. Mrs. Dunn, 58, was walking on Winnall Moors with her husband on September the 2nd, when hundreds of insects, thought to be mosquitoes, descended. She said, We were attacked by a massive swarm of black flying things. There were about 200 of them. Her husband, Terry Dunn, said, I just couldn't believe what was happening. It was like something from a horror film. The bites, up to 3 inches in diameter, left Mrs. Dunn tired and lethargic for days, she said. I think Hampshire Wildlife Trust should put warning signs up at this time of the year. Only days later, Jane's daughter Heather was in the garden of the Bishop on the Bridge pub near the River Itchen when she felt itching on her legs. She didn't see any insects, but was left with bites all over her calves, despite wearing tights. I've got about 40 of them, she said. It's quite ridiculous. Lucky it's not summer anymore, so I can cover them up. Perhaps something should be said so people are aware. David Rumble, head of conservation at Wildlife and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said he sympathised with Mrs. Dunn's situation, but the risk of bites is, quote, not singular to a particular area. He said, if we were to list every possible hazard, it would be a long list indeed. It's perfectly natural. It's just the hazard of being outside. He advised walkers to wear an insect repellent and keep moving during warm weather. And there's a picture of Jane and Terry looking really quite upset with the situation outside Winall Moors Reserve, and a rather gruesome picture of her leg covered in bites.
A very different matter. Council numbers must be reduced. The number of city councillors in Winchester must shrink, the council heard. The Local Government Boundary Commission is reviewing the size of authorities. Winchester currently has 57 members, a figure the Labour group wanted to keep. Its amendment was rejected at the last full council meeting. The Liberal Democrats wanted to retain 48, but that was voted down as well on the casting vote of the new mayor, Eileen Berry, the first casting vote by a mayor in recent times. The Tories want the council to be cut to 45 councillors. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder, said that no change was not an option, adding, we can't retain the old numbers when all around us is reducing. Opposition councillors argued that fewer councillors meant poorer representation for people, especially in villages.
Tributes to Lady with a Twinkle in Her Eye, Village Mourn, as Kathleen dies aged 101. Mischievous, witty and twinkly-eyed, the villagers of Kingsworthy and South Wanston are sorely missing a resident who lived amongst them for over 70 years. Catherine Bulpit, who's pictured in the article, died at her home in West Hill Road North, South Wanston, this summer at the age of 101. One of nine children, she was born in Christchurch in May 1913. Moved to Winchester as a child and then settled in a bungalow in Legion Lane, Kingsworthy, on marrying Horace in 1937. The couple lived there for six decades as they raised two sons, and Kathleen became a central part of the community. She possessed a strong Christian faith, singing in the church choir and arranging flowers there. One of her floral creations was on display in Winchester Cathedral during the Queen's Silver Jubilee celebrations in 1977. After her children grew up and left home, Kathleen went to work in Winchester's tax office in Southgate Street. Her initial six-week posting turning into an 18-year career. Horace died in 1992, and Kathleen later moved to South Wanston to be nearer to her son, Michael, with her family spending many weekends transplanting all her favourite bushes, trees and flowers to her new home. She grew a little deaf in later life, which meant that her neighbours regularly heard both the programme Songs of Praise plus her singing along. Kathleen eventually blew out the speakers of two televisions. Her devotion to flower arranging continued, and she was seen determinedly scaling a five-barred gate at the age of 94, keen to ensure Hunton Church was decorated on time. This was no surprise to her loved ones. The year before had seen Kathleen, then a mere 93, insisting on a second ride in a Land Rover off-road experience, which saw muddy water lapping round the vehicle's windows. She was lovely. She really was. There was a real twinkle in her eye, said son Michael. Mind you, she never told anybody her age until she was 98.
Now here's the cheerful piece for those amongst us who like the odd bit of bubbly. Headed, Couple's Hard Work Bears Fruit. A couple who started their own vineyard in the South Downs have won a national award for their homemade bubbly. Donna and David Lyne of Mary Hill Lane, Droxford, have run Poppy Down Vineyards from a caravan for 4 years and are finally reaping the benefits with a medal at the London Sommelier Wine Awards. Their 2012 vintage Elderflower Sparkling Wine won a bronze medal in the country wines category. They hope to enter their other sparkling wines, which include rosé, chardonnay and rhubarb, in next year's award. The couple moved to Droxford in 2007 and harvested their first grapes in 2010. They've been living in a caravan while they build a new home on the 16-acre site, which they previously used to rear alpaca, pigs and turkeys. Donna said, "We've always wanted to live on our own land, and we've turned it into a really good business. The village has been really supportive. We've got our wine into some big hotels and wine merchants, and in future we'd like to do a lot more events up here, including wine tastings." And there's a rather lovely picture of Donna and David standing in front of the vines in their own vineyard.
High hopes for new treatment centre. £150 million project for emergency care underway. Hospital officials have said the new centre for emergency care in Mid Hampshire may be finished in as little as 2.5 years. Plans for the new critical treatment hospital, which will either be developed at the existing Basingstoke site or built from scratch at a new site nearer to Winchester, are underway as commissioners prepare for a public consultation. The £150 million project will offer round-the-clock consultanted, that's a word I've never met before, care, in a bid to offer the best services applicable for critically ill patients' needs. It's hoped that the move will also free up demand from other hospital services for those undergoing long-term treatment. Each patient would be assessed in accordance with their clinician's advice and would be sent to whichever hospital was deemed more appropriate. If you take cancer as an example, the treatment is not necessarily fandangled. Some operations can be relatively straightforward. Chemotherapy varies tremendously. You don't need to be here now for some treatment. We've got a new mobile unit so patients can have their chemotherapy outside of the hospital. It was confirmed Winchester's maternity services would still be in operation, but it would be a midwife-led unit and those requiring obstetric surgery would be sent to the new centre. The services that continue for 80% will still go on for Winchester, Miss Edwards added. People who have been waiting months for a hip operation don't want to hear their doctor has just been called out to a car accident. The centralisation of services will solve that, and it's a front door to those who need to be seen immediately.
And here's another bubbly article. Cork's Pop as winemaker celebrates world glory. A winemaker near Winchester is celebrating after winning an international award for one of its sparkling wines. Hattingley Valley was presented with the World Champion Vintage Rosé in the inaugural Champagne and Sparkling Wine World Championships with its 211 English Sparkling Rosé. The Merchants was also presented a silver medal for its 2011 Classic Cuvée. Hattingley Valley founder Simon Robinson said, "To win this title against stiff competition from Champagne around the world is a great credit to the team who have taken this winery from a standing start to first release with 6 years of incredibly hard work. We are excited and humbled to win this, and it gives us enormous encouragement and enthusiasm for the future." Emma Rice, winemaker, said, "This caps an extraordinary year for us. We're all delighted to win such recognition, not just for the rosé, but also the silver for the classic cuvée. We are a young winery with a tight-knit young team. To be world champion vintage rosé is a huge honour for us. We'll be working doubly hard to make sure we build on this. In its first year of the competition, the wines were judged by three of the world's foremost champagne and sparkling wine experts.